Amanda Neal's new novel, Changing Skies, which is based on her lifetime in music business, from singer to management and mentor and producer of junior star singer. Rachel Summers reads a serialization of the book for Brooklyn's Radio.
Chapter 2, Part 1. I slept in Summers' bed that night with an extra blanket to stop my teeth from chattering. My body felt dreadfully cold and weak from the shock. I hadn't stopped sobbing from the time Mum left in the taxi. Summer stayed awake to stroke my hair and soothe me to sleep. All I could remember was the kiss Mum blew at me before she drove away. Why didn't she tell us where she was going? Did Dad know? If he did, he'd never said a word. After he shut the front door, he just sat down and finished reading his paper like nothing had happened. I only noticed a slightly disappointed look on his face, something similar to when he thought he might have lost a game of chess to my uncle. His bottom lip curled over slightly in the same way as when he lost a major piece or made a silly move. But besides that, nothing. As always, Summer remained my comfort. She was like my warm teddy bear holding me close with her paws wrapped around me. That night, Summer held her own tears back so she could be strong for me the whole time. Consequently, she got very little sleep as she spent all night calming me down instead. I'll never forget the soft touch of her fingers gliding through my hair. Eventually, my mind drifted off into a deep, coma-like sleep, one from which I hoped I'd never wake up. When the morning arrived, I struggled to even get ready. As soon as I woke up, I felt an unbearable wave of emptiness and loss come washing over me. I saw my own misery reflected in Summer's face, her eyes red-ringed from tiredness and the tears she had shed when I had finally fallen asleep. The shock had taken over the whole of my body so much that I couldn't dress myself. Summer helped me to change for the gala that I had previously been looking forward to so much. Not being able to face eating, we both skipped breakfast and set off for school. The swimming baths were in a separate dome-shaped building at the back of the school field. Loud cheers echoed as everyone egged on their house teams. Summer left me in the changing rooms with the other swimmers to get my wristband and find the queue to register for the first heat. Everything felt like a blur as my head began pounding heavily. How could I possibly compete now, after what had happened? In my head, I just kept seeing the picture of Mother driving off in the taxi. The more I saw her, the more my head hurt. At that moment, the first heat was announced and I heard my name being called from the list. I walked towards the edge of the pool, and whilst looking up to see where Summer was, felt my heart wrench. She sat next to Belle, a girl from my class who had decided not to enter this year. Swimming was never her strong point, but music was. She was a brilliant pianist like her mother. I wished at that point I was sitting between them and not standing at the edge of what seemed like the pool of doom. Suddenly, I felt a dizzy spell take over me, and with one enormous splash, fell, hitting my head first on the concrete edge. I remember hearing a collective gasp from the crowds as they saw me fall, followed by the gurgle and bubbling of water as my ears went under and I started to sink to the bottom of the pool. Down, 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 down I went, further and further with no strength to get back up. It all went black. Everything. What happened next? I'm not entirely sure. It might have been a near-death experience or a flashback, or maybe a last thought of how I would have liked my life to have been. Whatever it was, it came out of the bleakness like an orb of light coming out of a tunnel, growing bigger and brighter until it formed into a vision of what looked like my parents sitting under an old oak tree. At least I assumed they were my parents. They looked young, no wrinkles, just smiles as they cuddled and kissed each other over and over. Then from nowhere, a little girl dressed in a peach sequin dress holding balloons came running towards them. She jumped into my father's arms, letting the balloons float to the sky. My father kissed the little girl on the forehead and spun her round while she and my mum giggled away in utter delight. Then, as suddenly as it had come, the vision retreated away from me, becoming progressively less clear as it receded and shrank. The next thing I recall, bubbles were surrounding me as I was pushed to the surface. I felt a weight from beneath me carrying me up and hold me above the water. I was able to open my eyes and see the bright lights of the dome above me. It was eerily quiet, as the spectators and my fellow competitors alike held their breaths as they waited to see whether I had drowned or survived. as I gasped for air and took my own deep breath, feeling alive again, a cheer rang out as everyone realised I was indeed still alive. It was then that I realised I had been saved from drowning. Jimmy had dived in and pulled me out with the help of Summer. Both fully clothed and dripping wet, they dragged me to the steps at the edge of the pool, wrapped me in a towel as I lay there, my head covered in blood where I had knocked it. It throbbed constantly, but for some reason there was no pain. I felt nothing at all now Jimmy was with me. I was so glad to see him. "Oh, Skye, you know you're not supposed to hit the water until the whistle goes. You're always too eager," Jimmy said sarcastically. "And you know that dive would have been better on a board and away from the edge. Did you not remember anything I taught you?" As always, he was trying to make light of a serious situation, but I couldn't laugh. Not at all. My head was pounding. I knew he was just trying to make me feel better by lightening the mood, but nothing could drag me out of this hell. In truth, I wanted him to cuddle me, but he just didn't see the signs. So I came out and just said it. "She's gone," I said faintly. "I know, Summer told me." He looked down at the floor. "She's taken everything, Jimmy. Absolutely everything. She'll never be back now." I felt the pit of my stomach turn over and over as I uttered these tragic words. "You don't know that traffic light." He tried to smile, hopefully, using my nickname from the fateful day of the tumbling paint pot. "You don't know what was said between them. Adults are weird. They make stupid choices and decisions that kids would never make. It might just be a wrong one, that's all. She'll be back, I'm sure." He took my hand and gripped it tightly to reassure me, but I unlocked his hand angrily. "Why am I always the last one to know? I just want to know why. Did I do something? Did I not love her enough?" I sat upright, yelling back at him, totally oblivious to the scene I was making right there in the swimming pool, with hundreds of sets of eyes and ears all fixed on me. "This might not have anything to do with you, Skye. Stop overreacting. You always do this." "What?" "Take things the wrong way. I want her back. I want her back. I want her back. I want her back." I just kept yelling at the top of my lungs as tears poured from my tired eyes. My head was hurting so much I just couldn't stop myself from repeating those words. Jimmy suddenly grabbed my arms across my sides and wrapped his arms around me. He squeezed me so tight I could feel his ribs touching mine. I squeezed him back and we didn't let go until the school nurse and our PE teacher came to treat my head. As they prized us apart, I kept my eyes fixed on Jimmy the whole time. It was then that I knew I had my first feelings for him. That morning, Jimmy Ice Cream took my place at the gala and he swam the best I had ever seen him swim. Ignoring the concerned glances that were cast at his scarred back, he glided confidently and majestically through the water like a bullet, leaving a long trail of bubbles and the other swimmers in his wake. His body curved up and down, over and under the waves, so fast that no one else stood a chance. Summer watched whilst the school nurse bathed my head and sat me down next to both she and Belle so that we could all watch Jimmy finish the first race. My heart that had fallen so far that morning had now been lifted so high I could feel it pounding inside my chest. Tears of joy ran down my cheeks as he swam to the final bar and stopped. How pleased I was that my water beast, scars and all, had chosen to swim that day to show how mighty he was in the water. How courageous he was to save me and make my team win. My Jimmy Ice Cream had saved me again. Summer soon returned to college, and since Mum's sudden departure left me feeling so low, Jimmy and I spent more time together. I felt I just needed him to be there to reassure me that I was going to be all right. He never grew tired of me. At school, he waited for me patiently after every class had finished, even helped with gathering away my books and fetching my coat. The months moved on slowly, and gradually the raw wound of Mum's departure began to heal slightly as I started to feel less alone. After school, Jimmy would prepare me a chocolate milk when we arrived back at mine, then sit by my side on the porch step until Dad was due to come home. Then he would go home and make an excuse to call me again later. That's how I liked it, but I would never admit it to him. When I was left alone with Dad, I tried to imagine that Mum was still around. I pictured her downstairs, still singing softly away to herself whilst doing her usual chores. It was the only way to block out the eeriness of the house that she had left behind. My father was like a ghost. wandering in and out as he chose, moving around me without a word. Every night he expected me to prepare a light supper for both of us before I went upstairs to bed. There was very little interaction between us at the dinner table because he just didn't seem to want to talk about anything. But one night, I remember this just changed. It must have been after more than 6 months that I first noticed a change in his behaviour. We dined a bit earlier that evening, as Dad had mentioned he needed to go out and meet someone. I never questioned him whenever he had appointments, as it was never in my nature to. However, it would have been nice for him to have confided in me once in a while. I had planned to call Summer whilst he was out with the hope of speaking to her about my birthday. I wanted to go and stay with her for a few days, as I knew Dad probably wouldn't have organised anything for me. I actually couldn't bear to spend my 12th birthday at home, knowing he was going to treat it like a normal day in the calendar. At dinner, we both sat at opposite ends of the table. He would usually just finish his meal, ask me how school was, and then retire to his study. But that evening, he just sat, holding his cutlery without even attempting to raise one morsel to his mouth. Staring at his plate, I asked him whether there was something wrong with the pork and apple stew I had made. "Nothing, dear. It all looks fine." He looked up and tried to force a smile. "But something's wrong, Dad," I said. "You didn't do assembly at school this morning, and Mr. Farrell said you came home early this afternoon, but when I came home with Jimmy, you weren't there." "Jimmy?" "Jimmy?" he interrupted me. "Yes, James Silver. You know he and I are friends." I carried on eating, shoving most of my peas across the side of my plate, hiding them under my mashed potato. "That boy is bad news. I don't want you spending time with him anymore," he said, pointing his fork at me and glaring at me sternly, his eyes burning with an all too familiar rage. "Why? You've never had an issue with me being with him before, have you?" I questioned, almost choking on my food. I decided to push my plate to one side, knowing I couldn't stomach any more and wishing desperately that I had never brought Jimmy into the conversation. "His family are from the other side of Marston Hill. I know of them well. His father has a checkered past, one you should stay well clear of." His voice grew sterner. "But I never see his family. I've never even been to his house, Dad. Anyway, his dad owns his own newspaper and everything. Jimmy is really kind, not like the others. He never judges me." I tried to reason with him as I broke away from his stare, getting up and taking my plate over to the kitchen. Dad followed me and stood in the doorway near the kitchen counter. "There's no reason to judge us, but every reason to judge him and his family," he spat bitterly, every word coming out like an arrow being fired at a target. "Now don't question me again. It's my final word. I want you to stay away from that boy. Besides, he won't see you much longer anyway." He turned away to return to the dining room. "What is that supposed to mean?" I asked, a surge of panic starting to rise within me. "I've decided to send you to a convent school in France. Now your mother is gone and I'm busy with my work at the school, you won't receive the attention you need. I think a good, solid grounding is what's best for you." "Best for me or best for you?" I shouted back. Once again, I felt my heart being dropped from a great height as the realization of the impact of his words hit me. Without another word, I turned and ran up to my room, slamming the door shut behind me. The thought of not being near to Jimmy made me panic almost instantly. I could feel myself breathing more and more rapidly. Dad retired to his study, reluctant to turn our disagreement into a full-blown row, which he knew was likely to happen if he'd hung around. Once my father had his final word, I could never cross it, and that was that.
Rachel Summers was reading from Amanda Neal's new novel, Changing Sky. Further editions on Fridays on Brooklyn's Radio at 7:15.